You miss those merry prankster days?
Well, only to the extent that everybody misses the time when they were young and having a good time. I wouldn't have missed it. And I think back on it fondly. Yeah.
I was just talking to a woman who wrote or edited a book. I think it's called the Viking Portable Beat Reader. I was trying to figure out if the Merry Pranksters were part of the Beat Generation or not, and I don't think she was too clear on it. Maybe you could clear that up.
Well, there are a couple of there's an overlap in terms of personnel, principally Neil Cassady, who of course is a central character in Jack Kerouac's On the Road. He's represented in On the Road by a character named Dean Moriarty. Cassady, who was a great friend of Allen Ginsberg and of Kerouac, really was the main driver. I mean, literally driver. He drove the bus when the bus went across the country in 1964, the Kesey bus. Neil Cassady was driving. Neil Cassady was very much part of the prankster scene. And there was a memorable party. One of the memorable parties of that decade, I think, took place on Upper Madison Avenue in about 64, when the bus, having been driven across the country by Cassady, arrived in New York. At this party were Kesey and all the gang, and also Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg and Peter Orlovsky, and a man who claimed to be Terry Southern but wasn't.
And were you there?
I was there. Yeah, I was there. It was not one of the great meetings. I think that Kerouac particularly had little use for us. Kerouac was then beginning to drink very heavily. He was not in a good humor. He didn't have much use for us. I mean, I can understand why. I think we probably looked to him like a bunch of suntanned California types. I think we looked a little bit like a Stanford fraternity party in a way, which was a little bit what we did look like. So this was an encounter between those core groups, the Beats and the Pranksters, in spite of having a common thread in Neil Cassady, I don't think there was a great deal of love generated between the two groups.
So the Pranksters were like new people coming on, right?
Yeah, I think the Pranksters were, in a way, the beginning of that what was going to lead to the kind of mass bohemia of youth in the late 60s. It was sort of things in a transition of bohemia from being essentially an elite condition maintained by a few ardent spirits to something that was available to everybody under 30, as it was in the 60s. And now bohemia seems to have vanished and to have no proper existence anymore. I mean, I suppose the concept of avant-garde and the idea of opting out of embourgeoisement is so elusive now as to be meaningless.
Well, you mentioned this immortal bus ride. I have a feeling a lot of listeners don't know what you're talking about. Can you elucidate?
In 1964, the summer of 1964, Ken Kesey and a number of his friends, Neil Cassady, I can't remember everybody who was on the bus. I was not on it. I won't say I was never on it. I met it in New York. It parked in front of my apartment, and we drove around New York on it. But I was not one of the cross-country riders. But Ken and Neil Cassady, Ken Debs, others too numerous to mention, my friend Jane Burton, went by bus through the Southwest, stopping in Texas, New Orleans. I mean, it was really kind of an easy rider, proto-easy rider trip. This was, of course, 1964, which is a little bit before America was able to recognize and categorize what this phenomenon was, this strangely colored bus with all these oddly painted people in various conditions. So they drove it across the country, stopped in New York for a while. We had that party. And then they went back by way of the Calgary Stampede, back to California. That was the sort of something that Ken did after he finished Sometimes a Great Notion. It was his celebratory expedition.
Weren't the Merry Pranksters known for their experimentation with LSD?
They did have a reputation for that, yes.
there was so much partying and drugging and this sort of thing. How did anybody find time to write?
Well, it wasn't easy. I mean, I think you really had to do it anymore in order to get anything done. You had to stop doing it and go off in the silence and the loneliness and the frustration and write, which it's much more pleasant to party.
That's what you did, didn't you? You left California and came.
Yes, in fact, that's what I did. I left.
So it was just too much?
Well, I think I'd had enough. Maybe I'd had enough. I don't know. It's hard to recreate the way I was feeling then. I wanted to get my book finished. My wife wanted me to get my book finished. And between us, we left. And I got it finished. And then I went to Europe, and I sort of fell out of the scene a little bit. I was back from time to time. I was going between London and California at one point. And then in 71, I went to Vietnam. I was a nominal correspondent of a small English publication called Inc., I-N-K. And then the world changed. I mean, it certainly changed for me, and I think it changed, in fact.
But I think it changed for you because also you developed a certain degree of maturity.
At the time, whether it was maturity or, you know, a failure of energy or a failure of nerve, I don't know. But I stopped doing it.